So we will not be voting on anything today, but we want to hear from our commissioners and our plant directors. So we'll start right off with Tom Roy, Commissioner of Department of Corrections. So thanks for coming, and if you have other people that you would like to introduce to testify as well, please give your name for the tape and then proceed.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Good morning. To my immediate right is Terry Carlson, Deputy in charge of our facilities, and to her right, Bill Montgomery, our capital guru, I will call him. He is has more information about our physical plant than anybody in our department. I am aware that the committee did some great work over the summer, and you traveled a lot and saw a lot of our facilities, and we're so appreciative of that work you did. And I was just reflecting on that a bit, if I could take a moment and thank you for doing that. I think the public doesn't necessarily see that kind of work that you folks do, and many nights away from home, and it is a burden, and I just need to thank you as a citizen for doing that. We have a short PowerPoint presentation. Our needs are consolidated into basically three areas, and Deputy Carlson will take us through those, and Bill and I are both available for some comments here. So away we go.
Good morning, Madam Chair. The Department of Corrections has...
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Terry Carlson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Facilities Division for the Department of Corrections.
Thank you. Please proceed. And, you know, I should first of all say that our chair is under the weather today, so we hope he gets better, but that's why I'm here in his place. So please proceed.
And we appreciate you being here today. We have three requests on the governor's capital budget recommendation. The total request for this agency is $47,869,000. We operate 10 facilities. 8 are for adults and 2 are for juveniles. Our first recommendation is for $10 million for asset preservation. We use asset preservation money to protect the investments that have been made in our state facilities by making needed repairs to infrastructure and building envelopes. We also address code and compliance issues and regulations with asset preservation money. So OSHA, compliance issues, Department of Health, fire marshal orders, etc. Asset preservation money also goes to building enhancement projects that improve safety and security for all the staff, the public, and the offenders. And additionally, we use asset preservation money to replace old systems that are not energy efficient. I have to say that we have identified a $100 million asset preservation need for our facilities. And the request that we're asking for at this point, again, is $10 million. Many of the buildings at our 10 facilities are old and in need of ongoing repairs. Two of our facilities, St. Cloud and the Red Wing facilities, were built in 1889, and our Stillwater facility will be celebrating we'll be recognizing its 100 years of existence this May. So, you know, they are always having projects that need to be completed. Windows need to be repaired, tuck pointing, all kinds of projects. The Faribault and Moose Lake facilities are converted regional treatment centers, and we acquired those facilities in the late 80s. These two facilities have been under continual renovation to make the buildings safer for our prison populations. We use asset preservation money for facilities throughout the state. So this slide talks about 6 million square feet of building space at our facilities and the type of projects that we use our asset preservation money for. We have a process of delineating how that money gets brought out to the facilities. Facility management and physical plant staff make requests, and they prioritize their needs based on safety, security, energy efficiencies, and other kinds of scoring metrics, and send that to our central office. And then Mr. Montgomery and several of us get together and make those decisions about how to divide the money up. This slide shows you, in comparison to other state agencies, how much square footage the Department of Corrections operates and why it's so important for us to get the $10 million. We have a lot of buildings, as I've stated previously. So our second project is for the fence at the Shakopee Correctional Facility. We are needing $5.381 million to construct a perimeter fence at the Shakopee facility. This facility houses all of our adult women offenders. So all custody levels of offenders reside at this facility, from women who are serving life sentences to those serving shorter sentences for nonviolent offenses. The women's prison has been located in Shakopee for many, many years, from the early 1900s. And when the new facility was opened in 1986, the population was much lower than it was today. I was working at the facility at the time, and we had about 85 women who were incarcerated then. And now we have over 600 women who are housed at that Shakopee Correctional Facility. So much has changed over those 25 years. At the same time, the Shakopee prison has coexisted in the community for many, many years, and we want to maintain a non-intrusive presence in the community. The photo on this slide depicts the concept we are thinking about, although it's not identical. It's the concept for the fence that we would put around the facility. The fence would be 12 feet high, have masonry pillars at the corners, and metal pickets. There would be a non-intrusive detection system interior to the fence to enhance security and alert us to escape attempts. The fence will meet our security needs, and we believe it addresses the needs and interests of the community. Of course, the purpose of a perimeter fence is to deter an escape, to detect an escape in progress, to delay that escape to allow staff time to respond and recover the escapee. So we need a perimeter fence at this facility to improve public safety, of course. And not only does the perimeter fence reduce the risk of escape, but it also reduces the possibility of intrusion into the correctional facility. And that is a very real issue for this facility. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a few slides. We are very pleased to inform you that the City Council is supportive of this perimeter fence, and you may know that there has been some controversy over the years from citizens who live near the fence, but at this point in time, I would say that most people are satisfied with our design proposal, and that those who have been opposed have said that if a fence is going to be built, that this design is probably the best, and they can support that. So I think we've done our due diligence in talking with the community about the facility. We held many community meetings last year and answered a lot of questions. Again, we really maintain a non-intrusive presence in that community, and so there was a lot of misconceptions that we were able to clear up through those community meetings.
And Ms. Carlson, I do have to say this has been going on for many years. You've done a really good job working with the community, and I visited that site many times, and we're hopeful that we can have some resolution in that regard. But thank you for all the years. I know you mentioned this past year, but there's been many years that it's been discussed with the community.
Madam Chair, you're correct. We have been asking for this fence for a number of years, and we appreciate your interest and your support.
So please proceed.
Madam Chair, I think this slide is most telling of the need. And Deputy Carlson talked about the growth of the prison population, and primarily that growth was the result of the implementation of sentencing guidelines. And back in the days when I started 40 years ago, it was fairly uncommon for a judge to send a female to a prison sentence. And sentencing guidelines changed the world in terms of sentencing options for judges. And as a result, we've seen that prison growth. And similarly, the city itself has grown around the prison. If I was a new commissioner with a boatload of money from you folks and you asked me where to build a prison, this site would be the very last place on earth that I would build a prison. Noting the elementary school, noting the church, noting the residential middle-class family neighborhood, it clearly is the wrong spot for a prison, but it has also contributed to the health of that community in terms of employment. Generally, the comments that I've gotten from citizens is this is a good neighbor in many regards in terms of employment and families able to rely on that income, but it's in the wrong darn place. And the fence, I think, gives us a future there. It assures not only intrusion from kids, basically, who play around this prison, and we are clearly interested in keeping those kids as safe as possible. One of my first visits to Shakopee, if you notice in the bottom left corner, you'll see a ball field on our site, and right across the street from our ball field is the playground for the grade school. And it's such an incongruent situation that we have to deal with it. And I have sleepless nights over this situation, and I hope we can resolve it.
And Commissioner, I did have one question for you, because, and I have to ask it because we hear it so often. What's the difference in price between this wonderful new fence and we keep getting comments that what's wrong with a chain link fence with razor wire on top. So could you just give us the difference in the cost? Do you have that with you?
Madam Chair, Mr. Montgomery is an expert in this particular issue, and he has analyzed that particular subject, and he can answer that question.
My name is Bill Montgomery. I'm an architect and the Capital Resource Administrator for the Department of Corrections. We have gotten expert estimates and cost for this very same thing, and the cost is just a little less than half for a typical double cyclone fence that we would use in a typical prison situation.
Thank you, Mr. Montgomery.
Madam Chair?
Senator Sentum.
Madam Chair, just for my edification, having heard you say what you did, and you probably wouldn't know all of the history, but just through department legend, do you know if the agency, you know, as all this developed, planning, zoning, hearings, and so on and so forth, a school placement, do you know if the prison system, Department of Corrections, ever testified at a local city council meeting in opposition to any of this?
Madam Chair,
Commissioner
Senator
Roy.
I don't have that history. I'm going to look to Deputy Carlson, who's been with the department
for a long time. And it would
be unlikely
that anybody would, but.
Deputy Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Sentum, I am not aware of any of that kind of testimony. I know that in the early 70s, I believe, there was a couple of very high-profile escapes from the prison, and that old prison is located at the top of this map in that vacant spot right above where the facility is located now. So there were some very high-profile escapes, and the city actually was asking us to consider putting a fence around the facility, the old facility, at that point in time. I also know that when the facility was being designed, that was built and completed in 1986, there were in the design plans a perimeter fence around a portion of the campus, but I am not sure what happened. We think that it was budget reasons why that fence wasn't built at that point in time. We couldn't find the history of that, and I was a corrections officer at that point in time at that facility, so I wouldn't have been privy to that kind of information.
It was a curiosity question. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. So please proceed.
So this gives you a little bit of information about the escapes that have happened from the prison. When we have women who are deemed to be great security risks, threats for escape, or who have attempted escape, we make a decision to either house them in our segregation unit, which isn't a great long-term placement for any offender because they're isolated from programming, but it's really our most secure way of housing those women. The other alternative for us is to, through the Interstate Corrections Compact, have women placed in other states that have more secure facilities, and we have done that. We have 5 offenders housed out of state right now. Oh, this slide says 4, and I'm not sure. It's either 4 or 5. And that's a bit problematic as well because they are now moved away from where their families and their children are located, you know, most often in Minnesota. And then also, through the Interstate Compact, it's an agreement between states to, you know, share problematic offenders or get people closer to where their families are. There are some compassionate transfers as well. So oftentimes when we send a woman out of state, then we'll get a male offender who has some serious security issues in his state in exchange. And so from our perspective, it's not really an even trade, but it's really the best that we can do. We did have an escape from Shakopee in December of 2013. A woman by the name of Angela Benjamin ran from the grounds. Very fortunate for us, the staff were out doing their jobs as they do so very well in our correctional facilities. They observed her running to the perimeter and immediately activated our incident command system. Local law enforcement was contacted and came to the scene immediately and was able to locate her within 20 to 25 minutes. She was out in the residential neighborhood. She was hiding by some shrubbery, and she didn't have any well-thought-out escape plans, but certainly that situation could have turned out very, very bad. And like Commissioner Roy said, these are situations that really concern me. The risk for a citizen in the area being hurt when a woman is escaping and trying to figure out what to do next, I think is great, and a fence would really help with that situation.
So, Deputy Commissioner Carlson, when you say 4 offenders are currently housed out of state, so where would be the closest facility that an offender would be in a more secure location?
Madam Chair, there are facilities in Wisconsin and Iowa that could house our women, but oftentimes through the Interstate Corrections Compact, it's a trade. Mm-hmm. And so we have to look where someone owes us. And so right now we have 1 of those women housed in Oklahoma, and I'm not sure where the others are located at this point in time, but they're
Thank
not
you.
Necessarily in border states.
Thank you.
So this slide shows you, and I'm almost done with our Shakopee fence slides, but this slide shows you how much our population has changed from 1986 when that prison was built to October, and the types of offenders that we house in this facility. In an earlier slide, I talked about the intrusion problem that exists with no perimeter fence, and we do have many, many occurrences of people coming onto the grounds, and oftentimes it's just that people don't know that it's a correctional facility, and they're out on a walk and wander through what looks to them to be probably a community college kind of setting. You can see since 2007, we have had 32 intrusions. I must also say, though, that there are some people who know very clearly where they're coming and that they come onto our grounds with purpose of introducing contraband drugs or alcohol onto the grounds for their friend who happens to be incarcerated to pick up, and with no detection system, no fence to keep them from coming on grounds, it creates a great, great, great safety concern for our staff who are out patrolling the grounds. And if they encounter someone who is on grounds, they have to try to determine why they're there and get them off the grounds, have them understand that they are on state correctional facility grounds and it's illegal to be there. It's a great safety concern for those staff. So this fence is as much to keep the inmates in as it is to provide security and protection for our staff and keep those intruders out. There's a lot of domestic violence that has gone on for the women who are incarcerated in our correctional facilities. They have lived lives that are full of them also perpetuating violence, and so we have imagined situations where, and we have received calls from angry ex-spouses and angry ex-boyfriends who have said that they're going to come on grounds and do harm to the person who's incarcerated. Again, I think that really clearly demonstrates the need for the security fence.
Madam Chair. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner Carlson, is the fence going to be similar to slide 7, or will it be more private, a privacy fence?
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, it is more similar to it's slide 6 on my presentation, but it might be slide 7 on yours. The picture that has recommendation 2 Shakopee fence.
Right, okay.
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Rosen.
How long has this fence been in front of our committee? You've been working on this for a long time, haven't you?
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, it's probably been about 8 years or
they know that question.
Possibly okay. Longer.
Please proceed.
Madam Chair.
Oh, sorry, Senator Newman.
Thank you. And my question is to the fence. That's why I interrupted. And to Senator Rosen's question, I remember this topic coming up when I was in the House, and that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So this issue has been around a long time. And, Commissioner, I will tell you that I am in agreement with you that we should have a fence around this prison. I mean, times have changed, and the nature of the inmates that you are housing now isn't the same as before, and I think it's, frankly, it's pretty remarkable that we don't have a fence. My issue is not whether we should have one, but what kind should we put up. And I'm not sure if the fence that the department is proposing is that real attractive fence that the city and the residents around the prison want, or whether it would be a typical chain link razor type fence that we would see at St. Cloud or Stillwater. And when I was on the bonding tour, I remember asking some of the staff, and I don't remember who it was, and the figure that I was told is it would be about half the cost to put up the typical prison fence as opposed to the real pretty fence. And so my suggestion, Commissioner, is that I think you're going to get a lot of support from legislators like myself to put up a fence. And I would ask that if the city of Shakopee and the residents around this area want a fence that's attractive, then that they should pay for the difference and not the citizens of the state of Minnesota. So to the extent that you are looking for money to put up a fence around that prison, I agree with you. But I'm not going to agree to have my constituents put up a fence that's real attractive, because that's what the city and the residents around it want. So you got me halfway there, is my point. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I have to echo both in my memory and my comments to Senator Newman. Certainly, I remember this project many years ago when I was in the House as well. And I believe that the need for the fence has only grown during that time. And I visited the facility and am quite impressed with what you do there, but am quite also stunned that there is not a fence. I just don't know if I've ever heard of a prison without a fence. But so I think it's absolutely essential that there be a fence there. But I also would like to know, and I asked on our bonding tour, but I don't know if I have the exact numbers in front of me, what the cost difference would be between the type of fence that is at any other prison in Minnesota, that type of fence, because these aren't the kind of fences that we see at other places, and what the cost of this fence is. And I think that would be helpful for the committee to have that distinction between the two. And I would submit to you that I'll be the first one to cast a yes vote to have a fence at this facility. But I do think we would want state taxpayers to pay for what a state taxpayer fence would look like at other facilities. And because of the unique nature of this, and I understand the history of it and its surroundings, I don't know if Shakopee has a local option sales tax or some other avenue to pay for those increased costs to get the type of fence that is so needed here. And I do have to wonder if the long history that this need has had, in other words, we've been talking about it for at least 10 years, might go to the heart of the issue might be that maybe some of the neighbors wanted a fence and some didn't. I'm just suspecting that may or may not be the case. But I think that might have been what I heard on the bonding tour. And so I think it's essential that a fence be there. I would like to get the numbers between the fence that you have proposed and a fence that would serve our other prisons, look at the difference between those numbers, and then would encourage the locals to actually pay for that local piece that might be over and above what the normal fence would be.
So, Mr. Montgomery, we did discuss this earlier in the meeting, so maybe you would just reiterate, and maybe if I flesh it out. I had asked related to chain link, but maybe what we should ask for a comparison between this fence, which is very secure, and another fence, which may be very secure in other prison facilities. Can you kind of compare those two costs?
Madam Chair and Senators, I don't have the exact numbers here on the difference between them, but I will say that it's a little less than half of the cost. And so you're probably looking at about $2.5 million for this other fence. I think we're asking, for 5.2?
5.3.
And so that's what the cost would be. And that was, again, a number that was given to me by a professional estimator that looked at those costs for us. That's how we typically get costs for these projects.
Thank you for that. Senator Metz,
thank you very much.
I kind of disagree with my colleagues here. This is not just a Shakopee situation. I mean, the prison is a statewide significant prison, not just a Shakopee prison. And I would think if I were a neighbor or the church or any of these people around there that if the higher cost fence is secure, I think I'd rather be looking at, and you get one shot at this. I mean, you're not going to build this every 4 years or 5 years, so you get one chance. And it just seems to me that instead of looking at razor blades and a very ugly wired fence, and the diagram shows a pretty nice, secure, more expensive, I understand that, but you've got residents there that put up with the prison. I don't know if you put up with it, if that's the way to phrase it. But, again, I'll repeat, you get one shot, and you got a nice-looking neighborhood fence that's secure, I understand. And it just seems to me that you do it right the first time. I know it's $2.5 million, and that's a lot of taxpayers' money, and they're hardworking taxpayers. They're not just taxpayers; they're hardworking taxpayers. So that's my thought on this. That
Senator Newman,
Madam Chair, Senator Metz, in response, you are correct. This is a state prison. And that is the reason why I am in agreement that we need a fence there. But the difference in the cost between the pretty fence and the prison fence,
I don't know if it's pretty, but go ahead,
is $2.5 million.
I know.
And my recollection is when I was on the bonding committee tour, I was asking questions about when did that prison, arrive on the scene. And my recollection is that when the current prison was built, that was really pretty much open space, and the folks that have now built in that area did so knowing that the prison was there. They made a choice. And so I remain in my belief that if the city of Shakopee and the people that live in that area want an attractive fence, and I don't blame them for wanting an attractive fence, they made a choice to build a house there or to buy a house there, and they should pay for it, not my constituents out in McLeod County. My constituents should pay for the prison fence of $2.5 million. That's the one that my constituents should pay for. And my constituents, Senator Metzen, they work hard too.
Well, Madam Chair, some of your constituents are in this prison.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is the argument we've been having for a very long time on this fence. And it is time to get this thing done. And I believe I came late, and I know several people did too, that this is not the first choice where you would put a prison site. That's what I heard you say, Commissioner. What I did not hear, though, was what the involvement from the city council or the county was in with this fence, because I do think there's a compromise. Senator Metzen, I agree with you. You do get one shot at this, but we don't need the Taj Mahal fence around the prison either. And I think out of respect for the residents that are in that community that do work at that prison, we could probably do a little better than a chain link fence. So, and not a brick beautiful monstrosity either. So we can make a compromise here, but I do think a little bit away in from the local jurisdictions would be nice.
So do you have more in your, did you want to answer this, or did you have more in your
Madam
proceedings?
Chair, I can comment briefly on that particular issue.
Sure, right.
One of the stumbling blocks over the decade, or since this has been around as an issue, has been the local reaction to a less attractive fence. A number of citizens believe that there would be a significant property value devaluation as a result of a typical prison fence. And we were sensitive to those conversations, and we had public meetings. Since I have been here for the past 3 years, we have had meetings at the prison. The new mayor has engaged his citizens as well. Local legislators have had conversations as well. We see this as a quality of life kind of issue. As I'm looking down at the highways here, when we build noise fences or noise remediation fences, we do that for citizens because the intrusion of noise or sight. And I personally believe that the state made a decision for this prison to be here, and I'm fully cognizant of the community developing around it. But again, it does serve the state, and we've tried to be good neighbors, and I think the state has some responsibility to be a good neighbor. So,
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, let me just tell you a little story about something that happened in my community. The state hospital was converted to the Federal Medical Center. And so that was a beautiful campus. But when that became the Federal Medical Prison Center, you know what? That razor wire went up, and the community was already developed. had been there for decades. And yet suddenly we had this federal medical center and all the razor wire went up. And so, well, I, and quite frankly, I agree with all the comments that have been said here. I wouldn't even mind if there was a Taj Mahal fence at Shakopee here. But it's all a question of who pays for it and whose responsibility is it. It's the state's responsibility to make this prison safe. It's the state's responsibility to have a fence there. It should have been there probably from day one. But I don't know that it's the state's responsibility to put a type of fence that maintains the quality of life or the property values of the district. I do believe that is a local responsibility. And on this committee, while we can't determine what a local government is going to do or not do or choose to do with its funding or choose not to fund, we do hold the purse strings here. And so we can determine how much this body thinks the state should pay for a fence at a state prison. And I think that's our job here. And to Senator Rosen's point, I think it would be helpful to know if the local community has some interest in supporting what we would call upgrades. We did this on the light rail project right out in front of this building, quite frankly. I sat on the CAP board. We have particular allotments for particular type of balusters and railings. And you know what? We didn't think what was the typical amount really fit in with the architecture of the Capitol. So we had to pay for upgrades. We had to get the money for upgrades. And I think that could be a similar process here. So that would be my hope. And quite frankly, until some money is allotted from the state, perhaps the local community has never been in that position where they need to say, oh, this is the type of fence we're getting, and if you don't like it, then we need to find a way to upgrade it. So those would be my thoughts.
Well, thank you for all the input. We're not going to solve this issue at this point, so let's think about this a little bit as we proceed into putting our bill together, and I think our input is good, but we've got to move on with the hearing this morning. So did you have any more to present?
Madam Chair, yes, I have our third project, yes. Which is the St. Cloud facility project. This project is at our intake facility. It's the place where we bring in all adult male offenders who are being committed to the Commissioner of Corrections. Over 5,000 people come into the facility as new admissions. And so there's lots and lots of movement into the facility. So this project has several components, and it costs $32.488 million. It includes construction of a new health service unit, remodeling of existing space for intake, and also construction of a loading dock and a warehouse outside of the secure perimeter. The project is about improving safety for staff by improving the layout and adding safety and security features to many areas in the facility. Due to space constraints, we have an inadequate number of holding cells in our intake area and various processing that we have to do. We can't also separate inmates' movement from those who are coming new into the facility through intake and those who are exiting. They share a common hallway, which is a very significant security breach. Additionally, the existing spaces aren't compliant with building or accessibility codes to meet the needs of our disabled offenders. So the first part of this project is to construct a new health services unit. And that current space that we are using now was designed to serve about 600 offenders. And today the population at that facility is over 1,000. The existing space is inadequate in both size and configuration, as I said earlier, to safely and efficiently deal with the increased population. So in the health services unit,
Madam
we
Chair.
Deal...
Yeah. Excuse me. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. And I've been there, and I just can't. The slide puzzles me a little bit. serving the needs of approximately 100,000 offenders, but that's not, we're not building, are we building a hospital? I didn't see anything. I saw an intake area, and I saw a glass cage and all, and desks and cubicles and things like that, but I'm trying to understand this serving 1,000 offenders. Is that an inpatient hospital kind of thing that maybe I didn't see?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Senator Senchum, no, it's not an inpatient hospital, but it's more of a clinic setting, a health service clinic setting that would be constructed new in that open area that we took the tour to outside of, you know, kind of by the water tower area. It's construction of this new clinic that would serve to provide the routine exams and intake processing, health service processing of our offenders. It also includes space for dental exams and treatment, minor medical procedures, and optometry and physical therapy. So inmates come into that area. They reside in the cell halls, but when they're ill or when they have medical needs, they will come into this new health services area. And the existing space is very, very cramped and was designed to serve about 600 inmates. That's where the numbers come from. And the population at that facility has grown. And so we need more exam rooms. We need bigger space. We need to put that security staff who is just sitting in the wide open area controlling doors, we need to put them in an enclosed security station so that safety and security are enhanced for that staff as well.
And Madam Chair, and maybe I just kind of figured this out a little bit. When you say serves the needs of 1,000 offenders, that's perhaps the population of the prison?
Madam Chair and Senator Senchum, that is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Somehow thinking you were serving 1,000, that you had this clinic that could process 1,000 offenders at a time.
Madam Chair, and Senator Senchum, okay. No, sorry for that confusion.
Thank you. Please proceed.
So once the health service unit is constructed, the current health service unit then gets renovated and converted into a new intake processing area. And again, this is an area that we toured at the St. Cloud facility. You'll remember the holding cells that were very crowded, and we need to be able to process offenders through intake into our facility in a more safe way. We need to build more holding cells and also spaces for staff to do the work that they have to do to process the offenders into that area. So they need a bigger space. And so they'll encroach on that existing health services space into this new intake center. And in addition, like I said earlier, we would separate movement of offenders who are coming into the facility and those who are then leaving the facility. We'd have separate corridors for them to travel, and also build more adequate staff office space and processing areas. Right now we're using broom closets and hallways to do many of the functions that have to occur.
Senator Senator.
And just more of a general answer. I'm trying to understand. You know, I as we said, we've been there and seen it, but I'm not understanding where all the expense. I mean, a community could build a new high school for $32 million, and we're building an intake clinic and a well. And so on and so forth. Is it all the security features that take it to that level of cost?
So who wants to tackle that one?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Montgomery.
And committee members. Again, we proceeded with a pre-design and utilized the services of professional architects that specialize in corrections design. And there are special conditions associated with corrections design that drive the cost of this thing up high. Contractors have to check in and out of the facility every day. All of their tools are inventoried every day as they go in and out of the facility. This contributes to an elevated cost during construction when you do facilities like this. And in terms of the square footage cost, we typically will build a brand new prison on the order of between $300 and $400 a square foot, which is way more expensive when you look at the costs that you build for a typical school. So that's the short answer that as to why it is that these costs are higher. And plus, the security features that go with this are way are much more have many more constraints than you would have in a typical school facility. The new space that we're doing is a little over 36,000 square feet, and the remodeled space is 23,000 square feet. So the total area that we're actually working with here is almost 60,000 square feet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, the third component of the project is to construct a loading dock and secure receiving center outside of the perimeter. There are many, many benefits that greatly enhance security to this part of the project. Currently, all delivery trucks have to come through the truck gate, that Sallyport area where two gates are. One gate is open, the truck drives in, and then that gate closes, and then we open the second gate for the truck to come into the facility. Well, as many heard on the tour, some of the trucks are too big, and we can't close one gate before we open the next. They both have to be open to get that truck into the facility to deliver the goods that we need. So modern prison design often has a receiving area outside of the secure perimeter, so you don't have to deal with that security breach of opening gates to bring goods in. It also allows us the opportunity to search products more thoroughly before they come into the secure perimeter. So we think that with this component of the project, we will decrease the amount of times that we open that Sallyport, that truck gate, by about 90%. And right now, we have over 1,000 vehicles entering through that truck gate on a quarterly basis. So that will be a significant security improvement for this facility. That concludes our presentation. We appreciate your time this morning, and certainly if you have more questions, we're available.
Well, we really appreciate your presentation, and thank you so much for doing such a thorough job. A number of us have been there a number of times, and it's always good to get these questions out in the open. Before we go to the Department of Human Services, unless there's other questions from senators, I was just wondering if you would want to comment on the part that the Department of Corrections plays in the sex offender program as we segue to hearing about the sex offender program, if you'd care to comment about that. And, of course, you can come up later, too, if you think of something later. Commissioner Roy.
Madam Chair, I could probably talk for hours on this particular subject, but I'll try
Please
not
don't.
To.
Yeah.
I was a member of the task force as well over the past year, and we spent many, many hours talking about this. But the primary role of the Department of Corrections is to, first of all, have sex offenders serve their sentence in our facilities. When they complete that sentence or get close to completion, we do a very thorough evaluation, a risk assessment, a psychological evaluation, an assessment of their compliance while they have been in our facilities. And based on that assessment, we then make a determination of risk level. That risk level then determines if, in fact, that person at the end of their sentence will be referred to the county attorney for a potential commitment petition. Our referral to the county attorney does not suggest that it will happen. It's just that this exists as a potential for this particular offender based on their history and our risk assessment. Then we are basically removed from the process unless we have to testify at a hearing, but then it falls under the guise of the county in determination of a civil commitment, and then the Department of Human Services to accept that person. We do have a program, however, at Moose Lake that serves a number of offenders who have a high potential for civil commitment, and we're trying to give them a more aggressive, and it's a partnership between us and the DHS, give them a potential for completing treatment while they are in prison, and that the petition then might not have to happen. So we are still not revved up fully and in terms of evaluation of that project and that collaboration. I can't speak to that today, but it's a hopeful strategy, and the numbers have been relatively small, so I couldn't sit here today and say it's the best strategy.
Thank you for that. And as we move into the Department of Human Services, if you'd care to comment on anything or any questions that might come up, please feel free to do so.
Thank you so much, and we appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So at this time, we will move to the Department of Human Services, and we're very fortunate today to have Commissioner Jessen here before us. And so thank you so much for coming in, and introduce yourself for the record and as well as the other speaker here. We're very thankful that you're here for us today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Lucinda Jessen. I'm Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And with me today is Deputy Commissioner Chuck Johnson. We'll be kind of dividing up kind of the overview of this. We also have with us Carol Olson, who's Hospital Administrator of Security Hospital, Nancy Johnston, who's head of our Sex Offender Treatment Program. So I think a number of folks who will be able to answer questions to the extent Deputy Commissioner Johnson and I cannot.
Thank you. So please proceed.
I think I'll just start with the high-level overview, and Chuck will finish up on this. I just wanted to make sure that we were had in front of you the governor's recommendations for the Department of Human Services. As you can see, our major focus is on redoing our St. Peter campus, particularly focused on the need to design and remodel our facilities at our security hospital. We also are proposing dollars to really be able to remodel some facilities for end of treatment in our sex offender treatment program, and then there are also recommendations for asset preservation and bonding for early childhood learning facilities. But I thought I'd just start off, if I may, Madam Chair, members, kind of with an overview about our highest priority, and I would say this is our highest priority at the department, you know, for the entire session, and that is really our St. Peter campus proposal. And when we look at this, I think it's just important to, and I know you all have been there and you've seen this, and some of you, I think, several times, but just to remind us all of the different populations we serve in our St. Peter campus. We have our security hospital, which serves patients that are committed to the commissioner because they are mentally ill and dangerous. You know, sometimes we do serve a few people who are committed as mentally ill, you know, where they're not able to be treated at Anoka, but mostly this serves mentally ill and dangerous patients. And I mention that because these are vulnerable adults. These are people who can and do recover. These are people from security hospital that on a regular basis do transition back into the community. Their average length of stay at security hospital is 8 years. Some are less than that, significantly less than that. You know, some are there, you know, I met someone who was there 25 years last time I was there. And then we have our sex offender treatment program, and I just want to remind members, and I think you all have a lot of expertise in this, but just that we have three phases of plus community preparation in our sex offender treatment program. So when people are committed to the sex offender treatment program in the way that Commissioner Roy just described, you know, they will go to our Moose Lake campus. And in phase one, and you'll have to progress from phase one to phase two at Moose Lake. And if they then progress to phase three of the treatment, they then come to our St. Peter campus. Phase three of our treatment on our St. Peter campus is in a hall that is behind razor wire. And then for those who are making progress, and we see more of them in treatment, they have to petition first the courts, the SRB, and then the courts, to see if the courts will approve their transfer to our community preparation services. That's CPS. So that is also on our St. Peter campus, but it is not behind the razor wire. But they are on the campus, and Deputy Commissioner Johnson will kind of show how that's laid out presently. So I just wanted to kind of remind everyone of those basics as we think about kind of what we're trying to do with this proposal for our St. Peter campus. And this is a proposal you all have seen before, a little updated kind of based upon what we know more, but certainly we've been here before talking about this. And I think when I started this commissioner, you know, and looked at some of the previous bonding proposals, which were add more beds at Neuse Lake, you know, I think we all stepped back and said, okay, we need to rethink this because of just the critical needs at Security Hospital to make this safer for our clients and for our staff, and the fact that when we're seeing people progress through treatment where we need the beds, and our sex offender treatment program really is on this second half of treatment more. So, but first of all, our first priority is we must have a safer, more therapeutic treatment environment at Security Hospital. I know that you all have seen it. We'll have some pictures later. But one thing, we need more safety for our clients and for our staff. If you look at those narrow hallways, you can't see around the corners. You know, we have more assaults than we should have. We have more patient and staff injuries than we should have. A building is not going to solve all that, and I understand that. We have been doing a lot of work, you know, and there's work, additional work we need to do, but a new building and a safer building will help. I went down just after the most recent, really absolute tragedy at Security Hospital, the first, I guess I'd say alleged murder, patient murder in 30 years. And I stood where kind of the staff would stay on that admissions unit, where we have admissions and crisis mixed together, kind of, and looked out. And it was interesting where you could see and what you couldn't see because of the way the building is designed. We have to have a better design to be able to protect the safety of those that we serve there, our employees, and also a better way to kind of transition. We think that with better transitions, the design will help us transition people through treatment more quickly. That doesn't mean fast, but, you know, we think we can, you know, reduce that average length of stay. So moving down, we also think it's important to separate our vulnerable adults from this predatory population served that our sex offender treatment program serves. Right now, you know, we have Security Hospital in kind of the top of campus, but we have parts of our mentally ill population served on the bottom part of our campus, which also serves our sex offender treatment program. Now, those are folks in the towards the end of treatment, but still, we are mixing vulnerable adults with very much a predatory population. And finally, this our plan gives us flexibility in our sex offender program. To meet we do have bed space needs. More of those are towards the end of treatment. But we can do this by adding new beds at Moose Lake. We can do this less expensively, we think, by the cost of remodeling, you know, space on our St. Peter campus versus building out new space. And we can do it, kind of gives us the ability to do it as we need to. Because there are some, you know, talk about changes and all. We know we need the bed space, but rather than build, you know, this gives us kind of flexibility to take things as they come, and we can talk about that more. And I think this is also very important in our sex offender program in the context of the ongoing litigation. And we can later answer your questions about that, and we'll have some more to say about that. But, you know, we have court pressures, and I think to make sure we are appropriately moving people through the treatment phases and through the treatment programs was also the focus of a very good OLA report on this program. To do that, we need to have, and I think we are doing a good job moving people, you know, kind of from phase one to phase two to phase three, but if we don't have the facilities for them in that community preparation services when the courts order them there, that puts us really at risk. And I would note that in the filings that are currently before the federal judge on the constitutionality of this program, you know, one of the positions we are taking at the state, because one of the plaintiff's positions is, you know, state, you must provide less restrictive alternatives. Okay. And one of our, you know, strongly held positions defending the litigation is, look, if that's true, then our community preparation services is a less restrictive alternative. You know, so I think we need to continue to have that available as the courts order more people into this part of our St. Peter campus. So with that, I probably will weigh in as Chuck walks you through the rest of the slides, but I'm going to turn it over at this point to Deputy Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chuck Johnson, Deputy Commissioner for Policy and Operations for the Department of Human Services.
Welcome. Please please proceed.
Thank you for having us here this morning to discuss our proposals for bonding. This slide lays out the specifics around the overview that the Commissioner has described for the St. Peter campus. As the Commissioner suggested, $56 million for Phase 1 on the Security Hospital, a $7.4 million request for the first phase on the sex offender program. You did appropriate $3.68 million to us in 2012 for the design work around the Security Hospital. Certainly dollars we put to good use in the last couple of years, and the design has shifted a little bit from where we were in 2012, quite a bit from where we were in 2012 and even a little bit from where we were in 2013 in terms of the design that we're looking at for the Security Hospital proposal. We are in a position now in the Security Hospital proposal that if approval came through this session, we'd be able to put this out to bid in the spring of 2014, shortly after the session got over. So we believe that we're in a good position to be able to move quickly on this project if the legislature is able to, if the legislature appropriates dollars for it this session. We've also continued to look at what we're doing in the sex offender program since 2013, and we have added some additional space from where we were in 2013, in part because the lag of a year has then created additional bed pressure, meaning that we need to move more quickly on getting some beds online quickly in the sex offender program. I'll describe that in more detail, but that's one of the results of having the timeline getting pushed back from where we were when we were before you a year ago. Madam Chair, the Commissioner already described this for you, but this lays out the two populations that we serve on the St. Peter campus and gives you a little bit more detail around that. We think it's helpful to remind folks of this because it can be confusing to understand the differences in these populations, given that they're both populations that are civilly committed to us and that we provide services for. As the Commissioner said, the mentally ill and dangerous population, the Security Hospital, is a population that averages about 8 years of stay in the program. We do believe in our planning that with the changes we're proposing to make to the physical facility, we can reduce that length of stay to 6 years. And we think that's an important part of this project, is really providing a better continuum of the therapeutic environment for treatment that will allow us to put people who are ready to move back into the community more quickly.
Excuse me, yes. Mr. Deputy Commissioner, when you say an average of 6 years, what population are you talking about? Maybe I missed that.
Madam Chair, I'm talking about the population, the Security Hospital, a mentally ill and dangerous population that is committed to us. And the sex offender program, which is another population that's civilly committed to us, sexually dangerous persons and sexually psychopathic personalities are the two categories that are committed there. And, of course, as the committee is aware, we have not had a lot of folks move out of that program, so it is different. And it's important to keep those two differences in mind. The sex offender program is a program where we have one person we've moved out, there are a couple other in the pipeline. In the Security Hospital, we're moving people out on a regular basis through the course of every year, moving people through treatment successfully, moving them back into the community where they're able to live stably. This gives you an aerial view of the St. Peter campus. I know folks have been there and people have a general sense, but the main point of this slide, I think, is to remind you of the two pieces, essentially, of the campus we have there, the upper campus and the lower campus. And if you look on this slide in sort of the upper left area, you have that large blue building that has the odd shape to it. That's the Security Hospital. That's on the top of the bluff. And then when you look at that collection of multicolored buildings that are down to the right from there, that is the lower campus. And between those two campuses is the Minnesota River Bluff. So they really are two separate, physically separate pieces of our campus. And as the Commissioner suggested, the goal here of the project over the course of two phases for the Security Hospital, proposing three phases for the sex offender program, but that's flexible depending on where the sex offender program goes, is to have the sex offender population using the lower campus and have all of our Security Hospital patients and all the phases of treatment for those patients be on the upper campus. And that's the goal of separating those populations so that we have the appropriate separation.
little more detail on the next two slides, first starting with phase one on the security hospital, and then secondly looking at phase two of the security hospital. And there's also a schematic on page 10, which for those who like to look at a schematic, but I'll talk a little bit through that as well, but that gives you a picture of what the upper campus would look like after we're done. Phase one is really focused for the security hospital on taking on the first issues that we think are going to be most important for those most acute patients who we serve. As the commissioner suggested, one of the key areas we address in this first phase is the evaluation and crisis unit. Separating, having a separate four-bed evaluation unit. This is for the patients who come in to us right after they're civilly committed, and we work with them then to, as the name suggests, to evaluate what their status is, to stabilize them, to identify appropriate medications and so forth. And it's really critical that we not mix those patients in with the general population before we are able to get them stabilized, identify what their needs are, ensure we're placing them into the appropriate phase of treatment and so forth. Additionally, the 12-bed crisis unit, having a separate crisis unit so that when patients go into crisis, which does happen with this population, it's part of the treatment continuum that we experience, that we have a place to move those folks that is separate again from the general population. Because not only is the person in crisis, but if they're in crisis amidst other patients, it affects the other patients and the treatment of the other patients.
Can I just weigh
in
here?
Sure.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, if I could just weigh in here. I was down about a month ago talking with employees across our security hospital and asking them for their ideas, what is most important. And we're also trying to figure out what can we even do in the interim before this is completed to make sure that we have a safer, this is safer for our clients and staff. And it just, again and again, they said we have to separate the crisis patients from admissions and the crisis patients who are in crisis from everyone else. So because there is a different situation, that is what is creating so many of the problems that we have at Security Hospital. So that is why I just wanted to reiterate the importance of this, I think, from our staff and clients' perspectives.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, and then we're also proposing in this first phase to build two new 20-bed acute beds for acute patients, as well as two 24-bed transition units. The transition units are really the units where the folks who are getting close to being the point where they can move back into the community go. It's a little more apartment-like living as to help them get simulated toward that transition of moving into the community. Right now, those patients are on the lower campus. So these two 24-bed units we moved into the first phase of this project help us to start to clear out some of the lower campus, create that separation between the sex offender population, the mentally ill and dangerous population, and also clear out those beds on the lower campus so we can begin the remodeling to create the additional space for the sex offender program. If you look at the schematic here, what's in white on this slide, which is the upper part of the slide, that's the new construction that's proposed for phase one. And then in dotted lines, you'll see the construction that's proposed for phase two. That separate building that's over to the left in the new construction, that's the transition bed units. Again, separate from the main building. And you can see in phase two, we build another of those two 24-bed units for our transition population. The evaluation and crisis unit are sort of in the upper right of the new construction. The acute beds are along the right side, and then the admin and vocational and recreational spaces along the left side of the new construction area there, and that's what constitutes phase one. And in phase one, we're doing more of the new building, which then allows us in phase two to do some renovation within the existing building and be able to move the patients who are in those places in the existing building into the new space. So it's a way to phase the project and have it work in a way that works from the construction standpoint, but also, as I said, really keys on putting into the first phase those parts of the proposal that we think are most important for the safety and therapeutic treatment of our patients. Madam Chair, going back to slide nine, this show is the phase two. I won't spend a lot of time talking about phase two. As I suggested, phase two is more of the renovation and remodeling within the existing security hospital. But this is the place where we get to, as Commissioner Jessen suggested, addressing some of those issues in the current building with the sight lines and the narrow hallways and so forth. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about that. I'll take you to those pictures that I know folks have been there and have seen these living units. This is one of the living units in the security hospital, showing you the narrow hallways, the poor sight lines, the split level This is really challenging, not just for our staff to be able to see what's going on in a unit, but also for the patients themselves to not know where other patients are when they're moving about, trying to go to their own room, trying to go about their day. And so it's both an issue of our staff safety, but also patient safety and the therapeutic environment. And the next two slides show you what this environment should look like and what we want it to look like after we've done this renovation. This slide is the Anoka Metro Treatment Center, another DHS facility. And Anoka is also a secure facility that serves people with mental illness. Wide hallways, well-lit, ability to have good visibility from the nurse's station up and down the unit so they can see what's happening in common areas and also into the living areas. And this is a slide from a Avera Behavioral Health Center in South Dakota that some of our staff visited. Again, a secure mental health facility, new facility. You can see how open it is, the ability of staff to be able to see what's going on and of the patients to be able to see what's going on in the environment that they're entering into as they move about the facility as well. And Madam Chair, just to jump back to this table that is on slide 11, not going to walk through this in detail, but wanted to make the main point of this proposal, which is the proposal we're putting forward for the security hospital is not about creating more beds. It's really about using the space better for the treatment and care of the people that are committed to us as mentally ill and dangerous. And so you can see through the phases how we kind of shift around where the beds are. But this isn't really in the end about creating more beds. We start out with 352, we end up with 356. It's really about trying to build better space for the treatment of the people that we have. We are not trying to expand the number of people that we have committed to our facilities. In fact, it's part of our goal under the Olmsted plan to move as many people into the community as possible. And that's a clear priority for the agency and for the state as a whole. So that's not part of what we're trying to do here. We just need to improve the facility we have for the people that are committed to us for their treatment.
At this point, I do have a question related to that. When we look at page 2, and you're talking about your six-year plan of $103 million, is it because you're expecting an increase, or is that just your total plan from what year to what year, the six-year plan? Could you maybe brief us a little bit on that?
Yes, Madam Chair. The plan over the 6 years, as you can see, the design money that we received in 2012 and the two-phase proposal that I've described here, it is not to provide additional beds. It is, as I've suggested, to redesign the facilities that we have, first of all, to provide a better therapeutic environment for treatment. And that's really particularly to trying to separate out some of the patient populations that we currently have mixed together within the security hospital environment. The evaluation unit, separate crisis unit, separate acute units, separate units for those that are in transition that is appropriate to helping them transition to the community. And we don't have that good within the facility now. And then we also, as you've seen, have issues with the sight lines in the facility affecting both our staff and patient safety.
So then, Deputy Commissioner, then your dollar figure here and your total in your plan is assuming that the population remains stable as it is today.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
That's what it shows here. This is all just to redesign the facility that we have.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, I'm transitioning now into talking about the sex offender program. If there are additional questions on the security hospital before I transition, I'd be happy to take those, but I can take them any time as well. Don't need
any questions from the committee? Then please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This slide shows, just to emphasize the point that we made a couple of times, a schematic drawing of the lower campus at St. Peter. The buildings that are in red are buildings that currently have patients from our security hospital in them. The buildings that are blue are those that are currently used by the sex offender program. And the green ones are buildings that are shared or being used for some common functions. As you can see, right now we have two buildings, Johnson Hall and Bartlett Hall, where we have patients in the security hospital program. These are transitional patients who have campus privileges, can move around the campus, and they're on opposite ends of the campus with the sex offender program in between them. In the Green Acres, which is a blue building, you see kind of the lower left there, it's shaped like a rocket or something. That building is where the Community Preparation Services is for the sex offender program. Again, those are sex offender committed patients, clients who have campus privileges. And so part of why we want to separate is really to get away from having these populations together. The pink line around the two blue buildings, the sex offender program, that is a razor wire fence. So that is a secure part of it. I think it's an appropriate razor wire fence, Madam Chair. But if people have questions about the fence, I can bring someone up who could answer them.
So is it a pretty fence or is it a razor wire fence?
Madam Chair, it's not a very pretty fence.
Thank you.
Taj Mahal.
So this gives you just a layout of what the campus looks like and where we're trying to go. Where we're going with this is to have Bartlett Hall, which is circled here and is currently being used by the security hospital, to be a building that's available for the general population, the sex offender program, and then to create more space within Green Acres and Sunrise, which are these two kind of rocket-shaped buildings to the lower left there, for the later stages of treatment and for the community preparation services for the sex offender program. And again, have some common functions that continue to be housed on the lower campus, but to move all the patients from the security hospital up to the upper campus. Madam Chair, page 16, this is the first phase, description of the first phase of the sex offender project, asking for a little bit over $1 million, which would be used for the pre-design and design for Sunrise and Bartlett buildings, which comprise the first and second phases of the project. And then also about $6.3 million for remodeling the two wings, one wing, the west wing of the Green Acres building, the east wing of the Sunrise building. As I mentioned, those are to create 30 beds each, so 60 beds total across those two proposals in the first phase of the project. That would allow us then to create more capacity in our community preparation services and that last stage of treatment. As Commissioner Jessen suggested, this is not only a stage of treatment where we need additional beds. We need additional beds not only because the federal court is wanting us to move in that direction, but also we are continuing to get more and more people moved by the state courts to that level of care, and we need more capacity. And we have I'm going to go to this slide to show you. You have an older version, I think, in your slides, but you have a newer version of this, which shows on the here on the PowerPoint attached to the back of your presentation. This shows you the bed pressure that we're seeing in community preparation services. We have, in June of 2013, had 12 clients that were in this stage of treatment. We now have 22 in April of 2014. And we're projecting, based on what we're seeing from the action coming from the court and the way other patients within our current system, as you can see, that we'll have 27 by June and be all the way up to 40 by 2015. Right now, we only have 23 beds for this population, so we're already at about the maximum number of beds that we have. We're working between the sex offender program and the security hospital to take some beds that are currently controlled by the security hospital, do some renovation around those, and create some temporary beds. So we'll have 10 additional temporary beds to get us through this year. But under this proposal, the 30 new beds in Green Acres for the community preparation services would come online in the middle of 2015, which would allow us then to be able to have more capacity for this population going forward.
Senator Newman has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Jessen, this is a Minnesota sex offender program is something that the state of Minnesota is, you know, we're going to have to face up and fix this problem. And I acknowledge that. And when I look at the current slide, it is anticipated that there's going to be an increase in this population, and your phase one and phase two, at least to a certain degree, takes into consideration what may happen in the future with respect to this population. My sort of broad overall question is, given the fact that the state of Minnesota is currently under a court order to address the Minnesota Sex Offender Program in Minnesota, and so far we haven't addressed that court order, and I don't know that there is any meaningful legislation moving through the system right now to address that court order. I have no idea what the legislature is going to do with the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. I don't know what it's going to look like. I would suspect it's going to change in some meaningful way. If we are in such a state of flux on the policy of the of this program, how is it possible for us to appropriate bonding money to so that we can do the bricks and mortar to take care of a population when I don't know that we know what it's going to look like in a few years? So that's sort of it's a real clumsy question, and I apologize, but I honestly don't know what this program is going to look like in the future, because unfortunately I don't think the legislature has addressed the question. So if you could just comment on it, and I'm sure that it is a discussion that we'll have to have, you know, on an ongoing basis. But if you could just kind of touch on it, Commissioner, I'd appreciate it.
And thank you for the question. I don't think it was clumsy at all. I think we all have that sort of question. So thank you for asking it. Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, I thought it was a very well put together question. I agree with the chair. Look, you raised several things, so if I could just take a couple of minutes and try and address them. First of all, as far as the, you know, there are two sets of court orders we're dealing with here. You know, one is the Judge Frank, who's the federal judge, who has motions pending before him, you know, about the constitutionality of the program. What he has done so far, is to order an independent group of experts to come and evaluate all the people in the sex offender treatment program. But really to start with those who are in our, alternative program. We're on our St. Peter campus, the medically needy, and young adult people who are committed based upon juvenile offenses. So the court order, as we get down to it, as far as exactly what is he ordering right now, his experts to come in and do evaluations of everyone. But in that order, as an attorney, I know this well, he also included a lot of language which would give anyone pause about the program. But we also are dealing with separate court orders in our state court system, where we have these individual clients who are petitioning to either move to our community preparation services or move out and be provisionally discharged into the community. And so we're dealing with those. So it's like we're dealing with the overall issue in federal court, but we're also dealing with one-by-one court orders, including a lot of court orders to move people into this community preparation services. I would say what we're doing here is to try and do the minimal necessary that we know we have to do, and that but give us flexibility going into the future. And that is why we're not here with a large, here is the overall solution for our sex offender treatment program, because given the uncertainty, given the fact that despite, I think, great efforts and a bipartisan basis in the Senate last year, we don't have kind of the legislature as a whole tackling this problem. We felt that would be, I can't anticipate totally what a federal judge will do. But I do know that we're having to deal with state court orders saying people are being ordered into this final stage of treatment. And I know that if we don't have beds for that final stage of treatment, we risk not only the kind of problems with the state court, but it puts us more at risk in this federal litigation. Because one of the, and I think you were out when I said this earlier, one of our defenses in this federal litigation is because one of the allegations against the state is, there was an allegation the state has an obligation to provide less restrictive alternatives. And our argument to respond to that is, if that's true, not agreeing with it, but if that's true, then our community preparation services on the St. Peter campus, which is not behind razor wire, that qualifies as that less restrictive alternative. And so for us not to have the beds that we need there puts us at more risk just from a litigation perspective. As far as the flexibility, Senator, I think that's, you know, as we looked at this, one of the reasons we wanted this phased approach, because you're not to this, is saying, okay, we know we need, now I'm being ineloquent, not you. One of the reasons we're taking this overall approach to be able to address the very real needs at Security Hospital and to separate the two populations gives us the ability to, we have additional buildings on the lower campus which we can renovate for the end of treatment as we need to. We're not proposing to do it all at once. But it gives us buildings that that we're able to kind of assess, really, on a year-by-year basis or a couple of years basis, do we need more beds? Or is the program moving in some totally different direction that we don't need them? Well, we haven't spent a lot of money building new buildings or renovating those buildings, but we've got them available if we need them. May I ask Deputy Commissioner Johnson if he has anything to add, if I may, Madam Chair?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, just to illustrate that a little bit, I brought back up slide 16 here, which shows phase one. As I mentioned, this is two pieces of remodeling, the Green Acres and Sunrise building. That's for 60 beds, as the Commissioner has said. This is for community preparation services and latter stages of treatment. We think we need to do that regardless. I mean, it's possible the court would do something that would completely make that not a good idea either, but we think we need to do this regardless because this is in the direction the court wants to go. It's the CPS services that we know we're going to need capacity in because this is key to how you transition people out of the program, which is certainly what the court wants us to be doing. Phases two and three, which, again, as the Commissioner said, we don't have those before you today, but we're looking at them down the line. This is what happens if we continue to get 55 to 60 new commitments every year. We don't move anyone to different alternatives or out into the community. This is another 174 beds, and this is the result of continuing along the path that current law would lead us. And we're responsible to be planning forward for what we do under current law and what we need to have available under current law, given these people are committed to us, we need to have the services and the space for them. But I don't think any of us is thinking that's where we want to be back here 2 years, asking for another $14 million to build another chunk of beds on the St. Peter campus for this population. But there are a lot of unknowns.
Senator Newman.
If I may, thank you, Madam Chair, and my sincere apologies. I now have to run away. But I would ask that you just keep in mind that it isn't just what the federal courts is going to do. It's not what the state courts are going to do. We do not know what the legislature is going to do with this program. And I don't think anybody can say with absolute certainty it will continue to exist at all. The legislature could decide to disband it. This has been a problem that has been growing for the last 25 years, and although I'm not an expert in it, I think it began to happen when we went from indeterminate sentencing onto the sentencing guidelines. And so the worst-case scenario, or maybe not worst-case scenario, but a scenario, a possible scenario, was we'd go back to indeterminate sentencing and get rid of the project. And what you would be then dealing with would be no patients in the future and only the patients that are currently in the system. We the legislature, created this about 25 years ago, and we can uncreate it. So my only, I just want to run a warning flag up. We do not know what is going to happen with this program in the future. We simply don't. And I don't want us to get in a position where we are spending significant sums of money on a program and for projects that we do not know what the legislature is going to do with in the future. That's my only point of wading in on this controversy. And now my sincere apologies. I'm off.
Thank you for the question. And before we go, I think Senator Nelson, did you have a question related to this
issue? I did. It's just a brief question, and I'm not sure if you can answer it, Commissioner, but maybe it's not under your purview. But regarding the Minnesota Sex Offenders Program, I'm just curious about the danger in waiting for a judge's ruling as opposed to legislative action before that, or maybe it's wiser to see what the judge requires and then legislate accordingly. I just kind of like a little bit of your thoughts on that, if that's at all in your wheelhouse.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, well, several of you will probably remember that I was, very supportive of the bill the Senate passed last year. Which would have required biennial evaluations of all clients and going straight to the court for the court to proceed to receive them, and to at least explore kind of creating less uh, you know, restrictive alternatives. And there were a number of other changes. I thought good reforms without dramatically changing the program, but would kind of really move the program in the direction I think the OLA suggested. So I was very supportive of those reforms. I was sad that they were not taken up in the House. So I'm not one of these. I think everyone should just sit back and let a federal judge decide what happens with our program. You know, having said that, I also, you know, am realistic that there doesn't seem to be that movement this year. And as Deputy Commissioner Johnson said, we have an obligation to provide the right, you know, space and treatment for the people who have been committed to us, you know, and to at least, you know, take the minimal amount of steps we need to in that direction. And that's what I think this bonding proposal does, is because, quite frankly, courts are moving people into this end of treatment phase, and a year from now, we're just not going to have the beds for them.
Thank you.
And could you update us on the proposal that had been made at the Cambridge facility, and is that possibly moving forward, or is that kind of dead for now? Or there was some community resistance, and I'm wondering if you're still looking at that possibility for the future.
Madam Chair, members. I think that the governor has made it very clear that from the administration perspective, we will not be moving members of our sex offender treatment program to the Cambridge facility. The Cambridge facility right now is kind of at the end of serving kind of a population that are people, individuals with developmental disabilities, but also kind of have some aggressive symptoms. But we are moving them out. I think we're down to maybe 5 people there now. We're moving them into community settings. But closely supervised community settings, which are more appropriate for them. So we are going to have a facility in Cambridge, and I think one of the questions we're looking at is what is the best use for that facility. But we are not planning on moving our individuals from our sex offender program there.
Thank you for that. Please proceed with your presentation.
Madam Chair, slide 17 shows, as I mentioned, phases 2 and 3 of the bonding proposal for the sex offender program. This relates to more renovation within Bartlett Hall, which we saw on the earlier slide, which would be used for the general population within the sex offender program. And again, as we just discussed, these additional phases are all flexible and dependent on what the need in the program looks like based on whatever other changes have taken place. But under our current estimates, we are continuing to get 55 to 60 commitments a year. As Commissioner Roy suggested, too, those commitments come to us from people who are finishing their sentences within the correction system. So changing sentences now doesn't necessarily change that pipeline until those people that are in the correction system now move through their sentences and come through for a possible commitment and so forth. So I won't go into detail on this, but that gives you a sense of what we'd be looking at in phases 2 and 3 if we were moving forward on the lower campus. This covers mostly things that we've already talked about, but I wanted to mention specifically that with the 55 to 60 commitments we've been getting a year, that we will be out of beds in the spring of 2015. So the reason that we have this proposal before you, the reason we added Sunrise to it from where we were last year to make it 60 beds instead of 30 beds in phase one is because we do have a pressing need that is related to general beds as well as related to specifically the need for beds in the community preparation services to be responsive to the court orders moving more folks into those phases of treatment. And as I said, all three phases overall, if we went there, would build 234 beds through remodeling older buildings on the lower part of the St. Peter campus. I'm sure we've already discussed this. This gives you, again, an aerial view of the lower campus and shows you all three phases, what will be done in each phase to each of the buildings. So it gives you a little bit more detail on what we've been talking about and a sense of where those first phases will come in Green Acres and Sunrise that provide us those first 60 beds that you can see at the bottom of the slide. You can hopefully read those words there to explain what's in the two wings. And then phase two, which is more getting into Bartlett Hall, some of the ancillary buildings that provide additional services and so forth. Madam Chair, the next couple of slides are just summary slides, but I wanted to just remind people this is, as the commissioner said at the outset, these two pieces, the security hospital and the sex offender program, are an overall redesign of how we use our St. Peter campus that is intended to improve the patient outcomes that we have within the security hospital, reducing length of stay, providing a more therapeutic environment that has the right kind of structure for the different phases of treatment, as well as providing better safety for our patients and our staff within that program. And you can see on the bottom part of the slide, it lists out the additional beds and so forth that are built, or not additional beds, but the newer beds and the renovation that takes place. And, of course, removing some of those hazards in the older part of the building in terms of the poor sight lines that exist within that facility currently. And also, of course, separating the populations between the upper and lower campuses we just talked about. And again, this provides a summary over the sex offender program, which we've already discussed in some detail. The critical piece for us being the need to move this year on the proposal for Green Acres and Sunrise in order to get that capacity developed with consistent with current orders that are coming from the state court and in preparation for what might be coming from the federal court. This slide provides you with the dates and the completion for the two-phase security hospital proposal, the three-phase sex offender proposal. For phase one, for the security hospital, our current estimate is that we'd have the project completed mid-2016, summer of 2016, so that's the phase one for the security hospital. For the sex offender program, the Green Acres, 30 beds in Green Acres, will be ready in the summer of 2015. And the Sunrise 30 beds are scheduled to be completed in the spring of 2016. Those are not on your slide, but there is a more detailed slide next that shows you. Probably can't read that, but if you have really good glasses or good eyes, you might be able to read the paper that's in front of you. But that gives you the full schedule across the three phases of both parts of the project, showing the design phases, the construction, and so forth. Madam Chair, as the Commissioner said at the outset, we have four priorities. We discussed the first two, which are the Security Hospital and the Sex Offender Program. The third priority is asset preservation. The Governor has recommended $4 million for asset preservation in the DHS system. We have multiple facilities across the state. These asset preservation resources will be focused on four of our larger campuses, Anoka, Brainerd, the Moose Lake campus where the Sex Offender Program is, and the St. Peter campus. The $4 million for 2014 is part of a larger list. I believe we have about $22 million, I think, on our current list of asset preservation projects, prioritize the key projects for this phase. I think the committee is familiar with asset preservation and the purpose generally. It's obviously to keep our buildings up to avoid having larger costs that come down the line. We have a overall, as I said, a six-year, $21 million, I'm sorry, I just looked at it on my slide, $20 million, a six-year plan. That we've laid out for projects across the system. In addition to the four campuses I listed, the other campus we have, of course, is Cambridge. We don't have any projects on Cambridge for this year, but that's another campus that is part of it we're maintaining over the longer term as well.
Before you go on, I had a question related to the Brainerd Regional Human Services Center and what might be the future of that site and how filled is it with needs for DHS? Commissioner.
Madam Chair, in our Brainerd campus, we have three different, programs. First of all, we have our Four Winds treatment program. It's one of our care facilities that treats chemical-dependent people who are committed mostly, but with serious chemical dependency problems, a residential chemical dependency program. We also have on the campus in a separate building what we'd call an ERTS, but it's basically a residential treatment for people with traumatic brain injuries. This used to be kind of a hospital. We kind of turned it from a hospital for brain traumatic brain injury into kind of this more residential but very high-level program. And that is usually, they're very well used. We also have a Minnesota Care facility where our Minnesota Care operations is in Brainerd, and we have a number of employees there that do a lot of our processing, answer phone calls in our Minnesota Care program, and just basically do a lot of, for Minnesota Care, what the counties do for our medical assistance program. So those are the three, parts of DHS we have on the Brainerd campus. And we our intention is to continue to have those programs in Brainerd.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, this gives you a sense of some of the projects that we'd be doing. I know we definitely have some roof repairs in this project, as well as some flooring and hazardous material removal amongst our bonding our asset preservation projects in the $4 million in the governor's request across those four campuses. Moving, Madam Chair, to priority four, which is early childhood learning facilities. Governor has recommended $3 million here for statewide grants. This is a bonding authority that's built into statute in the Department of Human Services that we've received money for sporadically over the last couple of decades at different points in time. And it's a little bit different in the sense it's not designated to particular projects. It's an RFP approach. So in this case, we would take this $3 million and put on an RFP. This goes out to local communities. There has to be, of course, a public entity involved. It's usually the school district who's involved. But there are often collaboratives between the school district, the Head Start, sometimes other community organizations that provide early childhood services, to often, more often than construct, is usually to renovate some older facility, an old school building, to build some capacity for early childhood within that community. And this has been, we've always gotten a very strong response to these RFPs, usually about three times the money that we have available gets requested. These do require a 50% match from the community, so it's a little bit different in that way, too. The community needs to step up and show its commitment by putting forward dollars for the project as well. One of the pressures that we see on these dollars currently and have heard from various communities is with the creation of all-day kindergarten. Many school districts have been taking up and using some of those older buildings that early childhood programming had been in, and that's then creating a chain reaction of putting the early childhood programs looking around for space again. So we expect there's going to be a lot of interest related to that from school districts and communities around these early childhood facilities. But really the purpose of it is to create good facilities that can ensure high quality and accessible services to kids across Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner Johnson, are these grants going to be available to programs that are already in place, that have already had the commitment from their local school district and the community to get a early childhood program started? Some of the ECFE programs are well established in the state. And in my area, one of the first pilot programs is down in Fairmont. And it's very strong, but it has had a commitment from the school district to keep it going. So my question is they were first out of the gate. They made the investment on their own. Would, if there was some upgrade, remodeling or anything, would they be eligible for these? Or is it possible to share the wealth, not just for new programs?
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, yes, absolutely. In fact, that's what a lot of the dollars get used for, is for existing programs that need to upgrade space, that have older space or maybe in a basement situation, something where or they need just better facilities in the sense of replacing old flooring or old windows or things like that. A lot of proposals come through that end up looking like that, just to make better space in the community for programs that are already existing. It doesn't have to be a brand new program.
And Madam Chair, Rosen, you and Deputy Commissioner, how does the RFP process work? Is it first come, first serve, or is it the size of the project, or do you look at the actual need? I mean, is something new going to go to the first part of the queue, or is it how does the RFP work?
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, it's a competitive RFP, so it's not a first-come, first-serve, and there are criteria that are laid out in law, but we also have, I think I have staff here, do I not have staff here? I don't have staff here.
No.
I don't have staff here.
And it's all up to you, Deputy Commissioner.
Yes.
We could get you more information on what the criteria are that are used in those proposals. I don't think that we necessarily look at new having a higher priority than renovation, but certainly the number of kids that would be affected or served, the degree of need in terms of the current facility versus what they would get out of the upgrade of facility would certainly be important. We do look at some geographic balance. This shows a map of the projects we've done over the last 20 years. And I could direct you to the statute as well, 256E.37. that lays out the criteria that are in law for how this has to be done.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Deputy Commissioner, you probably shouldn't have shown me the map. There is none in my district, none in southwest Minnesota. And very few in Senator Nelson's district, none in Senator Nelson's district or Senator Senjum's district, perhaps.
We got three.
And you have three. And so perhaps we could work a little bit more diligent on the geographic.
And Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, we've had this discussion with many folks about sort of the distribution. And obviously, in part, we're responsive to those that send us proposals. But also, our staff have worked pretty hard at trying to reach out to some of those communities that haven't in the past come forward with proposals. But it is dependent on the community having a proposal, having half the funding available. So we're not entirely in the driver's seat about just kind of spreading that around. We do need to make sure that those communities are themselves prepared to take on the project.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner, do you have a list of the communities that have a active ECFE program started? Is that something that you can?
Madam Chair, I don't have a list of ECFE, and Senator Rosen, I don't have a list of ECFE programs. I believe the staff are passing along around a list of the actual projects that have been funded over the course, so it takes these little dots on the little triangles on the map and tells you what that project is. So we give you a sense of those. I believe there are ECFE programs, though, pretty much spread around the state. But I'm not an expert on ECFE.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Nelson has a question.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, actually, I was going to echo the same comments that Senator Rosen did. I just want to assure the committee and the commissioner that there are a lot of young children in the southern tier of Minnesota who need high-quality child care and preschool. And it doesn't look like it by that map. But I will say that my district does have a very strong early childhood family education program, Head Start, lots of great programs. But I don't know that we can always meet the need. And so I support this proposal, knowing that if we can make sure that children are prepared and ready to learn when they enter kindergarten, many of the challenges that we face in K-12 will be solved. So I appreciate having this in your proposal.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, if I may respond, I wholeheartedly agree with you on all those counts. And I will, Mr. Johnson, I will also talk, if we get this bonding authority, we'll make sure that we talk with our staff about doing more outreach in the underserved parts of the state. As you said, we respond, but I think, you know, certainly we'll try and do more to reach out to make sure that we have geographic proposals to us across the state.
Senator Nelson.
And I forgot to mention, when I was talking about our early childhood education programs, which we have a number of, but not enough to meet the need. The last I knew, there were 347 children in Rochester who needed high-quality child care, preschool, and were unable to access it. So it's a growing need. But I also wanted to say, I had forgotten to mention, that we have a lot of private providers as well who do a fabulous job.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies. I was at Legislative Audit Commission, so I feel a little out of sync with the conversation. But nonetheless, I really appreciate I read through the materials as well, but the context page that you kind of gave on program growth and focus on St. Peter. And there are two things, because the Department of Corrections was on this as well. And one of the things I think, Commissioner, that the new consensus, and I think I know you need to plan for current law, but there is a new consensus developing. And so I would suspect, and what I've seen here, you're kind of having to deal with current law and that new consensus. I think the other thing, though, in touring correctional facilities, and there's been some discussion before, that can we do more within the correctional facilities themselves, because they're there anyway. So let's take advantage of that time rather than later on them going to civil commitment or some other things like that, because sometimes you have low-level offenders, especially that may be in a correctional facility, and some very appropriate training, education, treatment, whatever that may be, can keep us from having a really serious issue later on. And so it's kind of that new consensus link. And maybe, Commissioner, if you could just talk a little bit about, I know there's a little bit of overlap there. I know in St. Cloud there were some beds. They have some beds. Can they, you know, whatever. Maybe just with that general kind of comment, the Commissioner could just give more of her thoughts on that.
Yes, and for Commissioner, and also if Commissioner Roy wanted to weigh in on this too, because there is sort of the overlap. But Commissioner Jessen.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, first of all, I couldn't agree more. Both with the need to, is the balance that we're trying to do with regarding our sex offender treatment program and these proposals moving forward, that, you know, there. I'm not sure that there is a consensus yet. I'm hoping for one, Senator. But certainly there's kind of direction and pressure from the courts and others, and the OLA report, I think, gives us a good foundation about where we need to head. And I, as I have said before, I think maybe before you got here, I'm a very, very strong supporter of what the Senate, the bipartisan action the Senate took last year, is a good steps in that direction. But we also realize, so we're trying to bring a proposal to you that meets our very immediate needs. Mm-hmm. We need more beds, and we need them particularly toward in the end of treatment where more people are being ordered. But we're not trying to lock in large dollars in beds moving forward, but to at least give us the flexibility to renovate buildings if we need to moving forward. And that's what we're trying to do in this proposal to achieve the balance that you very appropriately refer to. I'm a large supporter of trying to figure out what more we can do in our correctional system as well. Commissioner Roy talked about that. I'm sure he would be more of an expert on that. I think that was one of the task force's recommendations. I know I strongly kind of support that.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if I could hear from Commissioner
Senator
Roy.
Kiffmeyer. Yes, he's here. He's coming up to the table. Commissioner Roy.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Senator. I know all of you have heard me talk about the need for treatment in our prison system. If we just become a system of containment with no treatment, our results are terrible. Last session, the legislature was kind to us, and we were able to expand some of our sex offender treatment beds and also our chemical dependency beds. I would agree with Commissioner Jessen that I'm not sure there is a consensus fully developed yet, but certainly we are proud of the work that we do, not only in our prison system, but a large number of sex offenders are also treated in the community through our community correction system and very successfully treated. So we will always have risk. We can never guarantee zero risk for any offender, but we are confident that with adequate treatment, we do become, we have better results. You're absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And perhaps more aggressive treatment in prison will stem the flow of civil commitment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Kiffmeyer.
Those were very good comments, as I had hoped that we would hear. I would say that probably the most crucial thing to us in the legislature is exactly that, because you always think of it as a DHS thing, and you hear that. But the system that where they usually come to first contact is often with the correction system, whether it's local or whatever like that. And we have wonderful programs that are out there, and the earlier we get to them, we avoid these hugely expensive, long-term, very, very costly. I think at Moose Lake, it's something in the $350 a day. In a prison system, a bed is closer to the $80 a day. And if we add some treatment there, way more effective use of our always limited state dollars. And it's just something that I think we as legislators, if we just keep on top of this and sense that, I think our leaders here are supporting that, legislative and so on and so forth. So I think in cooperating with that particular area, but I think even more so in regards to the Department of Corrections. And I don't know if we have. Is there something in the proposals this year? Commissioner Roy, you mentioned there was some funding last year for additional treatment in corrections. Is that true this year as well?
Commissioner Roy?
Madam Chair, Senator, we have no proposals in this year for expansion of treatment capability. And similar to the comments of Senator Newman, we obviously are aware of what the court might impose upon us or what the legislature will tell us how we should do our work. But our treatment needs are not met currently. And as long as I'm sitting in the chair, I will continue to ask for increased expenditures for treatment.
Thank you, and I would support that as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that, to the need for treatment in our facilities, I know that that was one of the things that disturbed me most in the OLA report, was that there was vast, vast amounts of time where we had patients or residents in our facilities, and there was very, very little time addressed to treatment or therapy. And I think that that certainly would be the best use of our dollars. And that might not be under the purview of this bonding committee, but I think that is an essential element. You know, bricks and mortar, I've toured the St. Peter facility twice now, and I realize that it's in bad shape. It's, you know, like about 1950, probably nothing's been done to it. I understand that. And I understand the sight lines and the safety issues as well. But I think the most important thing we can do is make sure that we are using that time that those residents or prisoners or whatever term is appropriate are in our state-operated facilities, that we're actually using that time to help them recover and prepare to reintegrate back into society. And I think adequate treatment is at the top of that list. And so I would support your quest, Commissioner, to continue on making sure that we have the adequate treatment, because bricks and mortar will not do it.
Senator Rosen.
Please, thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Jessen, can you explain again to what happens to if we do not comply with the federal ruling or court order?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, well, the current federal court order is to do these evaluations.
That's it.
That is it. And, you know, there was a lot of rhetoric and other things in the court order. I'm happy to give you a copy or, you know, and I know we have Deputy General Counsel Robin Benson who could kind of walk you through it. But once you get past all the rhetoric, what was the only direction was there must be these independent evaluations for every person in our program, all 700 of them, and the court gets to pick who evaluates them, and we have to pay for it. Type of order is very difficult because it's an order in the middle of litigation to appeal from. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's consistent with what, you know, the Senate passed and we supported last year, which we do need more regular evaluations. But that is the only thing specifically the court has ordered us to do at this point. And it's so for me to say what options do we have, it depends on what the court, if anything, would do next, then I'd be better able to answer that question about what our options would be.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know in the Health and Human Services Budget Committee last year, we did take we sent in our recommendations for bonding proposals, and the St. Peter campus for both of those were the number one, I believe, issue that needed to be done as far as members on the HHS Finance Committee.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm not sure where we are at in terms of the schedule, but if we are near the end or if the presentation is over, and if Commissioner Jessen has staff here that could walk us through the federal court order, I would be interested to know what it really says rather than going by rumor and innuendo. It's just a suggestion, Madam Chair.
And before we address that, Deputy Commissioner, were you complete with your early childhood facilities proposal.
Madam Chair, I say two quick things before I close that up. First of all, I was reminded that a couple years ago we picked up an amendment to this part of the statute that does say that 80% of the funds under early childhood have to go to communities outside the metro area. So there was actually legislative action taken to try to see more spreading of the dollars around the state outside the metro area. But I also want to point out that the governor's proposal is showing $3 million requests for this year, but is also showing $3 million each in the 2016 or 2018 bonding cycles. And that is, I think, in part to both address the issues we think may roll out from the all-day kindergarten, but also I think some of why some communities aren't necessarily taking advantage of this these dollars is because they're not there all the time. They're just there sporadically. And so a community that's planning a project can't depend on the possibility of being able to get some help from the state. And some communities have gone ahead and done these projects on their own with community dollars, which is perfectly fine, but they're missing out on an opportunity that might be helpful to them. And if we have those dollars on a more regular basis, we think we'll be able to help more communities be able to take advantage of it. And with that, Madam Chair, we can turn over and back to the conversation about the sex offender program. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deputy. And Senator Newman, were you looking for some sort of something on paper, or were you looking for a compressed version of the federal court order? While we have the commissioner here.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking for an oral explanation of the order. If the commissioner has the appropriate staff here and we are otherwise done with our agenda,
exactly.
I think it would be helpful, at least to me, to know really what is in that order.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, I will ask Deputy General Counsel Robin Benson to come up, if I may, and to provide that. I believe he's prepared to provide that overview.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself and proceed with letting us know what's in that order.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Robin Benson. I am Deputy General Counsel at the Department of Human Services with responsibility for covering the Minnesota Sex Offender Program and state-operated services areas, and have been working on the class action lawsuit since its inception and am quite familiar with it. To give the bird's eye summary of what the federal court ordered on February 20th, Commissioner Jessen summarized it quite well. It's an order that came out as a result of the state's motion to dismiss the complaint, which if the court had granted it, that would have been the end of the litigation. It was also an order that addressed motions by the class members, their attorneys, seeking preliminary relief, some of which included a demand for less restrictive alternatives and assessments of all of the current residents for placement, possible placement in new, less restrictive alternatives. What the court did was probably make nobody happy with its order in that it denied everybody's requests. It denied the motion to dismiss by the state, thereby keeping the lawsuit alive. It also denied all of the motions by the plaintiffs, primarily, though, because it had, as the court stated several times, it thought it was premature to grant the relief that was being sought in those motions. However, the court did not hold back in telegraphing what it would likely order once it had some more facts before it. And that's where we're at now in the litigation. It's a discovery phase, and we are preparing responses to a large discovery request made by plaintiffs recently. Now, the other part of the order was, we kind of have a parallel course going on here. The court appointed four experts from outside of the state, from Florida, New York, Wisconsin, and I guess there was one person from Minnesota, that are court experts. They're not experts from the parties. They are working for the court and responsible to the court, and the court has directed them to investigate all aspects of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program and where it touches civil commitment in Minnesota. And it has directed those experts in that examination to prioritize the review of several subpopulations and eventually the entire population of the sex offender program for potential, to evaluate their risk and their amenability to placement in less restrictive alternatives or even discharge, and also for plans for what would be appropriate for providing less restrictive alternatives. We are in a parallel track with both the plaintiff's attorneys conducting discovery, but we also have the court's experts who are essentially conducting discovery and have been granted by the court wide latitude in what information they have access to and their abilities to examine every aspect from individual client cases to the program as a whole. So that's the quick summary of where we're at and what the order has provided us.
Are there questions Chair, for the testifier? Yes,
one
Senator
follow-up
Newman.
Question. Could you very briefly explain what the court telegraphed? What did Judge Frank telegraph in his court order?
11 o'clock. Oh, yeah, good idea. Mr. Benson.
If I'm putting you on the spot, I apologize. I'm not. That's not my intention.
Deputy Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator, if I may, I mean, perhaps one of the things we could do is get you some highlighted language from the court's opinion, because I think it's really, I think that would answer the question better, and we don't have that right in front of us, than us trying to summarize that for you or, you know, take it out of context.
Perfectly acceptable, Commissioner. My apologies. And that suggestion is very acceptable. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And also, maybe we could get sort of a timeline. I think it would be helpful for members to know what kind of a timeline we're working on with this court order. Perhaps you could identify that in your what you transmit to us, and we would appreciate that.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to. There are some real unknowns there.
Right.
You know, could I just provide one kind of additional comment in addition to Mr. Benson's?
Please do.
And I think this gets to your question too, Senator Newman. I think what the court is trying to, the court made, had all these motions before it based on the law, mostly just based on the law. Kind of the state saying, dismiss this. This is clearly constitutional. And the plaintiff saying this is unconstitutional for these various reasons. And the court dismissed those, as Mr. Benson said, but I think what the court's trying to do is let there be a record developed, kind of not just, not just by the plaintiff's lawyers, but also through these court experts, so that the court can make these decisions based on facts. And so I think that, but how long the court lets that factual development go on is not crystal clear to us, but we'll give you at least what we do know as far as timelines.
Thank you very much for that. And seeing no further questions, thank you very much for your presentation. Thanks to the committee for their great questions. We're very fortunate to have the commissioners.